is The Buzz 24/7 at morningbuzz.com.
This is unbelievable.
Now that's what's up.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Morning or afternoon or evening, whenever you might be listening to this. They call it time-shifted listening. That's what they call it, in case you're wondering in the radio business. Whatever. It's Archive Friday, and we're away next week on vacation, but we got an Archive Friday for you. Dug this one out of the archives for you. A former capo in a mafia family. Talking about mafia life, ladies and gentlemen. Today's Buzz Archive Friday. Here you go, everybody. Last night, I watched a little bit about the mob, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm gonna make him an offer,
Ken. You're funny. You know how you tell a story. What?
How the f*** am I funny? What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me.
Can I ask you something?
What?
What's... Forget about it. Forget about it.
Forget about it.
I don't give a f*** about jail. That's my business. That's what I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, the former capo in the Colombo crime family, part of the National Geographic new series called Inside the American Mob, joined on the phone by Michael Franzese. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Is this Andy?
Well, Andy's in. That's Greg over there. Why? Why do you need to know?
What do you want to know for?
Do you know something about Andy?
I'd like to know, just in case you guys say something out of the way. I don't know who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
But that's a good way to start this, because I wanted to ask, if when you talk to people, do you ever notice, like, just someone in general, that they are still kind of in fear of you because of who you are and what you did?
Well, yeah, I do notice that. You know, I don't understand why. I mean, you know, things have changed, obviously, with me. But, yeah, I do notice that. People are sometimes a little taken back. Not everybody, but, you know, some people do react like that.
But you understand, though, Michael, right? The human condition is that we are reticent to believe that someone can change, right? That's, you understand that people don't always have faith in the fact that people can change. Now, I believe people can change, but yeah, people are fearful of what they think a person is. That's fair to say, right?
Well, I understand that, you know, and even though you do make changes in your life, and I think I'm kind of an example of that, you still are who you are. You still have the capabilities of being who you were at
exactly.
One time, and, you know, sometimes you have to fight that off. And,
yeah.
You know, I always say this, you know, when you make the change, you don't get a lobotomy. You don't forget what you were or what you did before. You just kind of control it and move on in your life, and hopefully that's what I've been able to do.
Mm-hmm. Michael, how have you, over the years, been able to deal with that mentally, on the mental side of, like, when you look back and you obviously know all the things that you had done during those, you know, those years of being in the mafia, how do you justify it in your own mind, everything that you did?
Well, you know, you can't justify it. I mean, look, I was part of a life that was a destructive life, and there's no way to get around that. And I don't ever glorify it, because I realize it was wrong at the time. But you got to understand, when I came into the life, I was excited to be there. I mean,
sure.
My dad was the underboss of the Colombo family. This kind of brought me closer to him. It was somebody that I idolized throughout my life. And, you know, when you come into that life and you take the oath, you realize that you're given certain conditions and policies and rules, and you're told straight out, if you violate the rules, you can pay serious consequences. And we all figure that, hey, it's a level playing field. We understand what we're getting involved in. It's a life that allegedly is built on respect and, you know, and honor. So, you know, I had a very idealistic view of that life, because in a way I grew up in it, watching my dad, you know, be who he was. So, you know, you kind of justify it while you're there. But when you step out of it like I did, which was very difficult because I was so much a product of the street, it took a long time for me to reconcile the fact that that was wrong. And even when I walked away from the life, knowing that it was a bad life, it took me years to, you know, to believe that I wasn't betraying the oath that I took. So I mean, it was a struggle. It took me a long time, but fortunately, you know, I married a woman who was very helpful for me. We're married 28 years. She was a strong person of faith, and I was able to surround myself with good people. And, you know, I say that. That's a big factor. You know, we weren't meant to go through this life solo. We have to surround ourselves with the right people. And, you know, so over a period of time, I've been able to overcome it.
Michael Franzese from a former capo in the Colombo crime family, part of Nat Geo's Inside the American Mob. Let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, it was a violent life. People were killed. Obviously, you don't shy from that. The history is what it was. Why do you think, what is it why does America, me, everybody in America, we have a romantic notion about the mafia, about the mob, about La Cosa Nostra, that is, in almost, we're almost forgiving in a way of its history because of some romantic notion we have of it. How do you explain, can you explain that?
I mean, well, sure, it's very simple. I mean, you know, look at a movie like The Godfather. I mean, Michael was, you know, I've been compared to him many times. I always tell people he should be compared to me because I'm real and he was fiction. You know, I mean, he was a bad guy, but people looked up to him. I mean, the movie The Godfather did more to elevate the status of us guys on the street than anything before it.
I agree.
And it was the media and Hollywood that created this romantic idea of that life. Money, power is very intriguing to people. It's kind of an aphrodisiac. And I realized it more when I got out of the life and started to speak and realized just how intriguing the life is to people. When you're in the life, you don't that's just your life. But when I got out of it and I saw how people reacted to me, I said, wow.
Yeah.
And you got to attribute that to the media and to Hollywood and so on and so forth. And by the way, this show that Nat Geo did that airs this Sunday night, the 28th, I think from 9 to 11, two episodes. I don't do many of these. I'm pretty selective. This is the most well done, the most informative, most credible series that I've ever seen on this life. It takes the mob from 1970 up through the current time.
I watched
it. And for people that are interested in this life, you're going to get a real treat in watching this because it was not only myself, the interview, but the interviews that were conducted, the way they put it together, they did a tremendous job on it. So I'm proud to be a part of it. Honestly,
I watched it and I thought it was great and scary at the same time. Go, Kelly.
Michael, did you look at it like Michael Corleone in the fact that at the time you were a businessman? I mean, if somebody had to be hurt or somebody had to be dealt with, the victims knew the risk and they broke the rules.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the way you justify it. I mean, again. Field is, you know, it's a level playing field. We all start out at the same level. We're given rules and regulations and policies. You know, there's a lot of discipline in that life, a lot of honor, allegedly honor, a lot of respect. And if you violate, you know you can pay severe consequences. So you kind of justify in that way. And, you know, I dealt with it that way the whole time that I was there for 20 years. And I'm not saying it's right because, look, anybody can make a choice in life. You could be told to do something, you could say no.
Right.
And then suffer the consequences. But most of us did what we were told when we had to do it, and that was it.
Michael Franzese on the phone with us. Go ahead, Andy.
Michael, out of all, as we talk about all these movies that were made about the mafia and stuff, is there one that you have watched that's closest to the actual truth of the whole thing? Is there one mafia movie that let you watch and go, okay, that's exactly how it was really like? Or are they all very realistic?
No, I mean, no question. Obviously, like I said, The Godfather was great, but it was fiction. The two movies that capture that life most realistically were Goodfellas and Donnie Brasco. And, you know, I knew all those guys pretty well. I knew both of those crews. And they actually mentioned my name in Goodfellas. But they captured the essence of the life. And, you know, the characters were great, and the storyline was pretty consistent with reality. So, I mean, I always steer people to that. I mean, they were kind of graphic, rough movies, but if you're into the life and you want to get a real view of it, they were the most realistic.
Donnie Brasco, I mean, he got involved in your crime family, right? He infiltrated your crime family. Did he bring you down? Was he one of the guys that helped get you indicted?
No, Joe Pistone, you know, who's the actual agent, Donnie Brasco, he started with the Colombo guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, by some good fortune, he hooked up with the Bananos, and he got involved with Lefty Guns, who I knew very well. So He brought a lot of guys down. I met Joe when he was on the street, but fortunately never did any business with him, which I tease him about now. I said I probably wouldn't be here to talk about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did a lot of damage, I would say, in that life. I mean, to infiltrate at the level he did, he certainly did his work.
What's the skinny on Whitey Bulger? We're up here in New England. We've been talking about Whitey Bulger for years. Is he informed? Some say he was getting paid by the FBI. So, I mean, he was paying the FBI for information. Some say he was an informant.
Let me tell you this, and you can take this to the bank, because I didn't know Whitey personally, but there was talk about him. The reason, he was definitely an informant, no question about it, and he was giving information on a lot of the guys in New England, you know, Patriarca and all of those guys, that whole crew, and he left town because he was going to get killed.
Yeah.
I mean, they found out that he was an informant, and he knew about it, and that's why he took off.
Yeah.
Because he had relationships with the FBI for a long time, and they were trading information back and forth, and like I said, you can take that to the bank.
And how great?
That's awesome. I feel like I got some inside news.
We got some inside scoop.
Coming out in the trial and him saying he had no relationship with the FBI, that's nonsense.
And
he's definitely an informant.
You get a witness that ends up, you know, deceased. It's like, holy crap. It's like, and you wonder what the hell's going on. This is Michael Francis, who's part of the Nat Geo series that starts Sunday night on Nat Geo. It's called Inside the American Mob.
Michael, what was the ultimate thing that brought down the whole mafia now? I mean, you guys were going strong there. There had to be something that disengaged everything and made it fall apart. What was that?
Or is it?
Let me tell you this. You know, don't think it's gone. Life is still alive, and I don't think you'll see it disappear in my lifetime, because especially in New York, you know, the FBI and Rudy Giuliani back in the 80s really started effectively using the RICO statute and the Bail Reform Act, the Sentencing Reform Act, and he started to target the bosses of the families and went from the top down. And these RICO laws are very, very hard to fight. You know, he created a lot of informants because the sentences are severe and guys didn't want to do prison time, so they made deals. They developed more informants than you could imagine. You know, guys started to just defect from the life. And that's really what started it all. Then they took the union power away from us. You know, we controlled the unions in this country for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
So they took a lot of our power structures away. When I say our, you know, forgive me, I'm going back, but... But that's really what started it. But I'll tell you this. You know, back in the 80s, when I was running that life, they had 1,400 FBI agents that were assigned to all five families.
Yeah.
That's a lot of agents. We had about 750, 800 made guys that actually took the oath.
Yeah.
Today, because the concentration is on terrorism, there's about 110 agents working all five families in New York. So you know what's going to happen. You know, these things run in cycles. The guys on the street is going to start to build up again.
Mm.
And, you know, over the next couple of years, the pressure will be off. They'll start to build up until the concentration goes on them again. So, you know, don't ever sell these guys short. I mean, it's not like it was, I think, during my time when things were, you know, really at their height. But I don't think you'll see it disappear in my lifetime.
Here's my question. So I watched it. It's very good. They demonstrate him taking the oath, you know, with the burning religious card in his hand. And they pretty much say, if you ever betray us, we'll kill you. That's it. They lay it right out. But Michael, here we are years later. You're out of the life. You've asked for forgiveness from the things that you've done and all that. But they still... How is it that you talk about it and nobody, are you ever looking over your shoulder for the things that you've said and admitted publicly?
Well, let me tell you this. You know, when I walked away from the life, I never intended it to be so public, but, you know, I was a pretty high-profile figure in Life magazine. They all blew it out of, you know, they really blew it up. So I had a really rough time. The boss of my family, you know, Persico, who's now doing life, he put an immediate hit out on me. My father disowned me for quite some time, and the feds were all over to me to become a witness. I had a real struggle for many, many years, but understand this. You know, I was a part of that life on a very high level for a long time, so I knew the mentality of the guys. I knew what they would do. I knew what they wouldn't do. I knew how to protect myself as best I could. I moved away from New York, went out to the West Coast. You know, there were times when the FBI, you know, they're obligated to tell you if they hear that your life is in danger. So when they would get word from their informants that there was a lot of talk about me on the street, you know, that guys came out to the West Coast to hurt me, they let me know. So, I mean, I was able to, you know, to protect myself. And quite honestly, everybody I knew in that life that I ran with is either dead or in prison for the rest of their lives. I just outlasted everybody.
Did you hear,
you know,
Michael?
Very fortunate, very blessed. I mean, that's really all I could say, because there's no blueprint that tells you how to walk away from that life without going into a witness protection program, which I wasn't willing to do. I didn't want to testify against people.
I'm just very fortunate.
I didn't know how it was going to work out. And look, I can't go back to Brooklyn and say, hey, guys, I'm moving back into the neighborhood. I don't sell my former associates short.
Did you?
So I know what I got to do when I have to do it. To make sure that I'm protected as best as I could.
Okay. Did you ever hear rumblings of where Whitey was when they were looking for him?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I live out on the West Coast. I live in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And Whitey, what I was told, there's a place out there called the Third Street Promenade, and it's a big shopping area, you know, and it's a couple of streets that they close off for people to walk on. And Whitey used to walk that street, and I was there once or twice a week. And I got to tell you, man, I guarantee when I saw his picture, I said, my gosh, Cam, it's my wife, her name is Camille. I said, I saw that guy walking the street with his girlfriend or his wife so many times because he hung out right there.
Yeah.
But I never knew it was Whitey.
Yeah.
You know, because he got old and whatever. I mean, he looked different. I wasn't paying attention that it was him.
Yeah.
But,
That's funny.
It was strange because, like I said, I lived there.
Well, I'll say it's a really insightful. The first episode that I saw that you were a part of, Michael, is a really insightful look into that life and how violent it was and dangerous it was. And it's on Sunday night, Inside the American Mob on Nat Geo. And Michael, we appreciate you taking some time to talk to us this morning.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, and I hope people tune in, I got to tell you, the one thing I found out, when they found Whitey, they went into his apartment, which was not too far from where I lived. They found like $800,000 in the wall. I wish I would have got there first.
And you know what? I'll do one more question. Do you, at all the money you made, millions and millions of dollars, you were one of the richest mob bosses in the country. Fortune magazine reported about you. Did you walk away, when it was said and done and everything like that, did you walk away with any of that, or was it all gone?
Well, you know, I had a $15 million restitution as part of my plea agreement, and I had $5 million in forfeitures, so I had to give up, you know, close to $20 million. I had legal fees, you know. It's just, mm-hmm. You know, when they put you through the ringer there, it costs a lot of money. Then I had to support my wife for, you know, 8 years while I was in prison, mm-hmm. my wife and kids. So it was a drain, you know. And they claim I got money buried all over the place because my case was like $2 billion. But mm-hmm. I'll tell you this. You know, if it's out there, I doubt I'll ever get a chance to use it. But
if it's out there, if it's out there, I like that.
Hi, Michael.
Great, Mike. Thank you for a great interview.
Thank you, Michael.
Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
How do you rectify that what you did and be a normal guy? I mean, I'm sitting there talking to him. I'm like, this guy's been in on whacking guys.
You know what my favorite part of the whole interview was? His consistency. Let me tell you this.
I know.
You tell me.
Say whatever you want.
And then we get a piece of Whitey Bulger information that the feds don't even know about.
No, see, we've known he's an informant for 20 years,
Whitey
Bulger.
Yeah, I love hearing the guy that it just
that's
says...
That's not a shocker.
We've known he's an informant. You can't deny it when he says... I really believe it when this guy says it. And there's two schools of thought.
Everybody knows he's an informant.
People thought that Whitey paid the FBI. Something came out last week that there was an FBI agent who took money and bragged about all this money that he got from Whitey. So, I mean, there's definitely a million stories going around. But yeah, here's a guy who's done heinous things.
I always liked their nicknames.
Lefty Guns.
Lefty Guns.
One of my favorites. Crazy Joe Gallo.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. You know, when he was talking about Whitey Bulger, he said that, let me tell you, Whitey Bulger, we found out that he was an informant and doing all for me. He was running from us.
Yeah.
He wasn't running from the FBI. He was running from them. So
his
we
dad,
kill him.
Michael's dad, awesome. Is Sonny Franzese.
See how we romanticize it?
Who was like, this is him telling, this is a quote, I killed a lot of guys. You're not talking 4, 5, 6, 10. He told his guys to wear hairnets when disposing of evidence. He's given, and these were bad dudes, as bad as you could be.
These were bad dudes.
And yet, somehow, in some twisted way, we romanticize what they did. And I think it all goes back to the fact that there was a code of honor, or at least which is, as much as you can have a code of honor when you're killing people. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. But they tell you when in the ceremony, if you ever betray one of the brothers, we will kill you. You know this. You accept this. This is the deal. But bam! There you go. Hey, have a great weekend. Great week. We will be back Monday, the 3rd of March. Thanks for hanging with us. We'll see you then.